Cast comes from the Sea Boat, with a southern style of cooking catfish, chicken, and shrimp, featuring the Sea Boat sandwich, two pieces of fish on a wheat bun with lettuce, tomato, and tartar sauce, and desserts like sweet potato pie. The Sea Boat at Bradley and Market in Champaign. Delivery and catering services at 351-6209. Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting String Serenade with the Pacifica Quartet on Saturday, October 30th at 7:30 p.m. in the Fullinger Great Hall of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The performance will include works by Bridge, Elgar, Dvorak, and Vaughan Williams. For more information, call 333-6280.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. Tomorrow morning on the program, just mentioned very quickly, we'll be talking with Dr. Uretz Oliphant. He's a trauma physician and surgeon here in Champaign-Urbana. We'll be talking about bariatric surgery and weight loss. Sometimes people who do have really difficult time losing weight and for whom it's a medical issue have used surgery to try to help them. So we'll be talking a little bit about that in the first part of the show. Our number two, our guest will be Dr. Amity Buxton. She's a PhD doctor, not an MD doctor, who is director of something called the Straight Spouse Network and has written a lot and done a lot of speaking about what happens when one partner in a family comes out and says that they're gay. And in fact, she's written a book about this that's titled The Other Side of the Closet, The Coming Out Crisis for the Straight Spouses and Families. So this kind of looks like, I mean, obviously this can be very difficult for the person coming out, but also can be very difficult for the family. And that's kind of what that book is all about. And we'll be talking about that tomorrow in the second part of the show. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week, and we always welcome your questions and comments. I think that it's fair to say that over the past few years, I don't know that it's exactly new, but over the past few years, there have been more and more people in the United States interested in exploring their family history, learning more about the experiences of their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, and how it is that that made them the people that they are today. And there are a lot of different ways that people have done that, collecting memorabilia, family heirlooms, but also collecting stories. And we're talking this morning with two guests who are very interested in writing for children and spend a lot of time watching what happens in the world of children's literature, and also have written books for children themselves. And they, the author of a book that uses some of their family history to tell a story that's not just about their family, but it really goes beyond that. Our guests are Janice Harrington and Betsy Hearn. Janice Harrington is the Children's Services Coordinator at the Champaign Public Library, and Betsy Hearn is Professor of Library Science in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at the U of I. And between them, they're also authors, experienced storytellers, and also authors of two books. Betsy has written a book titled Seven Brave Women, which is in part about some of the women in her family, her forebears, going back to her. How many greats does it start out with?
I don't even remember. Way back, Dave.
Several greats back. And Janice has written a new book that's titled Going North, that is about experiences of her family moving from the South to the North in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And it is this a new book?
No, yes, it came out in September, okay. Just this September.
And it has really lovely illustrations. I have mm-hmm. to compliment you both and also the illustrator who did the pictures. Mm-hmm. And I do want to mention, in fact, that Janice is going to be doing a book signing to talk about the book. And if you would like to meet her and buy a copy of the book and have a signed copy, this will be happening at Pages for All Ages Bookstore on Sunday, November 14th. At 3:00 in the afternoon. So you can do that. And of course, anytime you can stop by the library and say hi.
Definitely.
If you want to do that. Well, thank you both very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll have Betsy start out and sort of set the agenda for what it is we're talking about. And I hope that I've kind of got the idea of what it is we want to be talking about.
You pretty much said it all, Dave. Maybe we should better close
down. No. We have another 40, 50 minutes, so you have to stay.
Well, family stories do tell us who we are. And they not only tell us who we are, but they create community across families. In a sense, Janice once mentioned that all literature is a kind of family story. But if you go back to your own families, you'll probably remember people telling stories about the trickster in the family or the hero. Mm-hmm. And those stories really shape us that we hear around the Thanksgiving dinner table or whatever. I remember I was a history major, and way back then, about the only two women in the history that I studied of Western civilization were Elizabeth the Great and Catherine the Great. And it wasn't for a long time that I discovered the women who made history had a pretty low profile. But my mother had spent years telling me about the heroes in our family. You know, my great-great-grandmother who sliced her hand open with a knife when she was chopping vegetables, and she took a dishcloth, you know, stopped the bleeding, went and got a needle and thread and put it in boiling water and sewed up her left hand with her right hand. And we didn't read about that in the history of Western civilization. It took me actually until I taught a course in folklore, and I was telling the students, you know, we all have family stories. They were looking at me like, I don't have any family stories. So I started telling some of those stories in my family, and I realized that my mother was telling me that women were heroes, ordinary women who immigrated to this country, raised children, never led a charge or a military army, or never became president, but they were everyday heroes. And I think as I look back on my life, it told me that I could be a hero too in an everyday way. That's what I mean by the stories shape us and make us who we are. And I know a number of those stories that my mother told me came into Seven Brave Women. And Janice has a kind of similar background of her stories and her family shaping her.
I think I came to realize how important these stories were, because I hadn't known they were important. It was just, I grew up with my mother talking to me about how she learned to drive, or I grew up with my mother's memories, and I never put a value on those. And I never particularly, you know, listened. That was just something that went on. It was the weather of our family, my mother talking this way. And when I became a storyteller, and it became a vogue, really, there were storytellers who began to make their whole shtick was their family experiences. I began to think, well, I have those stories too, and to look at those. And the interesting thing is, we keep saying family stories, but really, many times they're fragments. They're little fragments, little memories, and that's what you look for. That's what you ask more questions about. The stories shape us, but I think also coming to realize that those stories, as Betsy has just said, mean that we're all a part of a bigger story. And I think the one thing I also want to make sure, if I say nothing else today, I always remember going to a workshop or something, and somebody was saying that they were theorizing that the reason teenagers will try to commit suicide or fall into these deep depressions is because they somehow truly believe that they are the only ones who have ever gone through a certain experience. You know, I'm the only one whose girlfriend abandoned them. I'm the only one who has, you know, this horrible acne problem. It's the end of the world. But if they've heard stories, if they've grown up in a family of stories, then they know, oh, I'm not the only one. I'm going to live through this. And that's another power of these family stories, to give you the strength that you need, the wisdom that you need, just to break through that I'm aloneness, you know.
I should emphasize that when we talk family, we're talking loosely structured families or differently structured families. I know that I've read parts of Seven Brave Women or a story told it to groups of foster children and children who don't have immediate blood ties. But the point is that a family is anyone who takes care of you and cares for you. And when a number of teachers across the country have used Seven Brave Women to have children look in their own lives. I mean, my parents and grandparents and great-great-grandparents happened to be sort of from Switzerland, moving out and into the West as covered wagon pioneers. But listen to some of the stories that children have written about their ancestors. This is from Maritza Gomez. My great-grandfather's name was Jose. He was born in Mexico in 1890. My great-grandfather was born during a war, and he survived it. He stayed in Mexico the whole time. By that time during the war, they used to take teenagers to war. People didn't want their teens to go to war. They used to dig a hole in the ground and put them in there. My great-grandfather was hidden in a hole, and he was scared. My great-grandfather was special because he was nice and sweet. And he talks about remembering his great-grandfather. And there were a lot. There were stories of children who whose parents and grandparents and great-grandparents came from various parts of Central America. Here's one from Guatemala. My mom works cleaning the house of a lady every Saturday, and how heroic that is. They send money back to the family in Guatemala. And my favorite sentence is, my grandma's name is Maria Elena. She did not do anything special, but she managed to handle 11 children on her own. So these children really have a sense of the ordinary as heroic if they're given a exposure to the idea.
I come back to the thought where, Betty, you were talking about the fact that sometimes when you introduce this notion to your students, they say, well, you know, there's no big stories in my family. Mm-hmm. And I think that says something about the fact that even if you do have good stories in your family, that their importance may diminish with the number of times you have heard the story. And no matter how good a story it is, you may think to yourself, oh, no, here it is again. Yes, I've heard the story about, you know, how you walk to school 5 miles uphill barefoot in the snow every day. I'm trivializing that, but
no.
I'm sure that kids and maybe get to the point where, yeah, if you heard it over and over again, maybe the first couple of times you thought, well, that was pretty cool, and after a while you thought, yeah, I've heard this story. And that partly what you need to do is get people back in touch with just how significant those stories are, even if they have heard them a lot. It's probably better if you hear somebody else's story. You think, oh, my gosh, that's an amazing story. And then that person would say, oh, what are you kidding me? I've heard that story all my life, all through my childhood. I'm tired of that story. So, that you know, you have to impress upon people the uniqueness, the specialness of stuff that they come to take for granted and maybe even are so tired of that they don't even want to hear those stories anymore.
Dave, after my youngest teenager crossed the Rubicon into adulthood, she once said to me, you know, Mom, I didn't hear a word you told me after I was 12 years old, but I heard everything you told me before I was 12. So keep repeating those stories, folks, because they come back. They come back. They stay in their subconscious, and repetition is what folklore is all about. You know, you hear the three little pigs 15 times, and you pass it on to your children and your grandchildren. There's something in those stories that's about survival, and that's why we remember them, and that's why we pass them on.
I think you bring up something, though, which is I'm not sure that people are listening, even in families, that's having time to listen, having the space to listen, or having that skill, that ability to quiet yourself enough to attune to another human being. And I work with kids who don't yet have that skill, that ability to listen, and that's why I find storytelling to be so important. And so when I'm trying to work with kids and help them go out and find their own family stories or their family experiences, a big part of that is teaching them how to listen, how if you want to stop a story, you know, then you question it, or you turn away, or you, you know, go tune yourself into the internet. And what I try to do, and Betsy works with stories, but what I try to do with my work with kids is with poetry. And what I like is that you can play a lot with language, you can have a lot of fun, it's very accessible. So a child can create a poem and create something right away with these family stories and these family remembrances. And so a book that I might work with could be Seven Brave Women, or also When I Was Young in the Mountains by Cynthia Ryland. She has a wonderful hook that she uses all the way through her stories where she'll say, when I was young in the mountains, and she gives some memory. And so what I've done with kids is give them some sort of hook. It might be when we lived on 28th Street or Alabama mornings, whatever the hook will be, mm-hmm. and have them just go back and remember the things that they can recall and hook that to that, the little bridge we've created for them. And once they have that experience and they've made something successful, then they want to go back to their own families and ask more questions and listen. But I think the key is listening.
Yeah. Let me just real quickly reintroduce our two guests for anybody who might have tuned in here. The last person you heard, Janice Harrington, she is the Children's Services Coordinator at the Champaign Public Library. Betsy Hearn is Professor of Library Science at the U of I in the Graduate School, Library and Information Science, both of them very much interested in literature for children and have each authored books that are based on family stories from their own families. And Betsy's is Seven Brave Women, and then the book that Janice has written is titled Going North. And would you read something from Going North, Janice?
Sure. Basically, this book is sort of a composite of the trips that my family took from the South heading north, really on the cusp of the civil rights movement when there was segregation in the turmoil in the country at that time. At Big Mama's house, everyone sits around the supper table talking about life up north. Everyone talks and talks about how much better the north is, how Daddy can find a good job there and how I can go to a better school. But isn't it good here? Can't we just stay? I don't want to go. I want to stay in Big Mama's kitchen, helping her churn the butter up, down, ta-womp, ta-womp, swapping stories and watching Big Mama knife scrape a sweet potato, dragging its blade across orange pulp and sharing a sweet treat. I don't want to go, I tell Big Mama. But Going North Day hurries to our door like it's tired of our slow-pokey ways. Everybody comes to say goodbye. Uncles, aunts, cousins too, brother, baby, sister, and me picked up, put down, passed around, and tickle-twirled all over the place. Everyone says, goodbye, we'll miss you. I slip off my shoes and push my feet into the rusty sand. I wish my toes were roots. I'd grow into a pin oak and never go away. Would they let me stay if I were a tree? Car loaded, everything packed, goodbye said. We're almost ready. We're going north. Goodbye, Big Mama. Goodbye, Papa Lop. We're going north, leaving Alabama far behind. Basically, the story is this girl who doesn't want to go to the north because of what she's leaving behind, this family that she loves very much, her grandmother, these experiences. And when she sees her parents encountering the repercussions of segregation that existed, then she realizes what this trip means and what it means for her family. And so the story ends with the words, be brave, we're all pioneers, which actually is the most important part of the story to me, because where they're heading is Lincoln, Nebraska. And if anybody's from Nebraska, you know that there is a state that is rich and steeped in stories and of the pioneers, the great mythology behind it. And so you grow up learning about pioneers in school, but you don't necessarily connect to those stories. But when I began to think about what my parents had gone through, the sacrifices they'd made, I'd realize, wait a minute, the pioneer is not just the person who comes across in steerage and goes across the West with a handcart. A pioneer is also, you know, the many African-American families that headed from the South to the North, or the Latino families, or the families from all the different cultures and countries that we have that are coming to the United States.
So this little girl who tells the story, this is you.
Yeah.
And Big Mama is your grandmother.
Yes.
What is it like for you to sit down and open the pages of this book and to see your life there?
I'm not used to it yet. I went to pages and I was minding my own business, and I look up on this table and there's my book, and I literally jump back 3 feet and I sort of skulked out of the store. It's like really terrible. But I think the best thing was I wrote this book for my mother, and I had the opportunity to read it to her, and I was reading it to her, and her eyes never left the text. She never paid any attention to the lovely illustrations that Mr. Larique did. She followed my finger moving across the text, and then there was this quiet, quiet voice about page 3 that said, "That's wonderful." And so what was meaningful for me was having been brought up with this great storyteller who gave me, you know, not the gingerbread man or Three Billy Goats Gruff, but who, like I said, how she learned to drive or how she met my dad or the time she almost burned her father's farm down and he let her live. You know, those stories accounted for how I became a storyteller. And I think that's another value of family storytelling is that you teach children that these narratives have value. They have value. Their own story has value. They're part of a much larger one. And that's how you make writers and dreamers and poets and just good people, I think.
Well, it is a lovely story. And and the illustrations are beautiful.
They're gorgeous.
They're really, really beautiful. So I don't want to take anything away from the text or the story itself, but because I would like people to go out and look at it.
Yeah.
So they could see just
how
lovely the illustrations are.
He did a great job.
I sort of cut in. I don't know, Betsy, you're getting ready to say something?
Well, I just, Janice's story of presenting this to her mother is so moving. And I have to say that my own mother shaped my stories as well. She was always telling stories. I grew up during World War II and then the Korean War and then the Vietnam War. I mean, there was always a war when I was young. And my father would listen to the war on the radio. I mean, and nobody was allowed to say anything during the time he was listening to the war. And my mother was a real pacifist. You know, my father's heroes were the soldiers, and my mother's heroes were the women who kept things going at home. And so Janice talked about a hook, and my hook was to open this book with a list of the wars. In the old days, history books marked time by the wars that men fought. The United States began with the Revolutionary War, then there was the War of 1812, and then I go through these wars. But then for each war, I take a great-grandmother, great-great-grandmother, who did things during these wars. And my hook is Elizabeth lived. My great-great-grandmother did great things. Elizabeth lived during the Revolutionary War, but she did not fight in it. She crossed the mountains from Switzerland, and then she crossed the sea to Philadelphia in a wooden sailboat. Her one-year-old child and her two-year-old child came with her on the boat. She was pregnant with her third baby. The food was bad. It was hard to sleep with all the babies crying. There were no bathrooms, but there were huge waves that rocked the boat back and forth, back and forth. Elizabeth was sick all the time. Sometimes she thought she would die, but she survived and had seven more children. And then I talk about a memento we have from her, a prayer handkerchief that she used. My great-great-grandmother did great things. Eliza lived during the War of 1812 and the Civil War, but she did not fight in them. Instead, she moved to Ohio in a covered wagon. Her parents spoke German, but she learned English. Her parents were Mennonites, but she married a man who was not a Mennonite. She worked on a farm all her life. Even when she was tired or mad or lonely, she had to work. She kept a herd of sheep and made blankets from their wool. We still have her spinning wheel. And talks about how she delivered the neighbor's babies and became the local midwife. Another great-grandmother lived during World War I, but she did not fight in it. My great-grandmother was brave enough to go to medical school when it was hard for women to become doctors. And she goes off and starts a women's clinic in India. My grandmother did great things. Betty lived during World War II, but she did not fight in it. She decided to be an architect. When she walked into her first class, the men met her with a sign that said, "No dogs, children, or women allowed." So with each of those, there's another grandmother who lives in the Korean War, and her husband dies when her two children are young. And although she hasn't graduated from high school, she goes and gets a job as a secretary. And when the children are grown, she takes in the stray cats and dogs off the street and takes care of them. So for each of these women, their lot in life is not easy, but each of them does what she needs to do and also creates great beauty in her life, as well as taking care of the survival of her family. And of course, this like Janice's, is narrated by a child who I projected to be one of my own daughters, a sort of collage of both my daughters.
And the title of that book is Seven Brave Women.
Right.
Good. And Going North is right. The title of Janice's book. Questions, comments, whatever. People want to get involved in the conversation. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The thing that strikes me is that it may these days be kind of hard to create a space for this kind of storytelling to take place, just because there are so many things that compete for our attention. There's an awful lot of noise. In our lives. For that reason, it might be difficult to make it possible for these stories to be told, or to as you say, to sort of quiet things down to the point where you can hear them.
It is hard. It's interesting. I had a grandmother who died recently, and I heard stories told of her life at the funeral that I'd not heard before. And I had even tried to pull the stories out of her. And I guess the lesson is, you can't go home and sort of put a metaphorical microphone in front of their face and go, tell me a story. You just always have to be listening. Sometimes when you're going through that photograph album, if you just ask another little extra question about what's going on there, you know, when did you guys live on that street? What was that like? It's listening. It's asking the questions. It's waiting patiently for when that fragment comes up and pursuing it.
The other thing is that there are all these little corners of time, and instead of fuming, a parent can use the time they're stuck in traffic with the entire playgroup in their car, or can use the time when the lights go out, or even just take some time at bedtime, and instead of reading five books, read four books and tell a story. There's so many ways to work these stories in if we become aware of the value of them. And really, children, especially when they're little, want to hear about it. Tell us about when you were little. And that's the time to do it. I mean, don't wait until you think, you know, they're big enough and smart enough to hear it. Start way back in the beginning.
Absolutely. And don't stop. And it doesn't matter if they've heard it two times. I think that's how it slips in past your mind and gets to your heart, the fact that you've heard it several times. And I think then the question becomes, why are they telling you that story? There's some reason, there's something there. And if you really stop and examine that, you know, why, what's so significant about the story of how they learned to drive, where they, for the first time, you know, maybe take charge of their own life or take a risk. You know, that can all, these stories not only shape who we are as people, but they also tell you who this person is who's talking to you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, these things also, if one, I mean, a child or anybody has a drive to tell stories themselves or to try to record stories, here's natural material. Mm-hmm. You know, they say write what you know.
Right.
That's not a bad place to start. Are there ways that you think you can encourage children to not only be interested in these kind of stories, try to elicit them, try to collect them, but also try to preserve them, which is really what both of you have done with Going North and Seven Brave Women?
You know, it's really important to start where the child is, and you don't need to wait until the child is literate and can read and write fluently. You can have them draw a story that you've told them, or you can have them tell. Sometimes for a child, their family story is about a pet, and then they can illustrate that, and you can write it down for them. There's so many ways that you can start very young with this and go all the way up through teenagers. Teenagers love to make fun of their parents. So, you know, start there with the stories. They can have a family story slam, and they can use slam in every sense of the word. But I know Janice has done a lot of this work, too.
Well, I think one of the moving programs that we had at the library is what we had Betsy come in and read Seven Brave Women, and then we asked the people in the audience to bring some family heirloom and talk about it, or something that reminded them of their own mother, and to talk about the object that they'd brought. And it was an evening that brought tears to your eyes because of the stories that people had to tell around these objects. But I think if the question is how do we encourage children to become family storytellers, I think I'm going to sound like a broken record, but they've got to have some. They have to teach them to listen, or they won't. There simply won't be any stories. The reason, one of the little microscopic things that led to me becoming a writer was that when I was young, I discovered my dad's scrapbook of his life. It almost started like Charles Dickens, sort of, I forget exactly how it started, but finding that made me start my own because I wanted something like he had. So I think if you are a model for your child, if you are telling these stories and you are a good listener and you're listening to stories, but more importantly, if you listen to your child, the thing that really made me a writer, because that's a question I'm getting a lot now, is that my big mama, my grandmother, would stand in the kitchen every morning and listen to whatever I had to say to her, even if it was an outright lie. She listened. And if you have someone who listens to you, then you will believe that what you have to say is important and that who you are is important. And you also learn the importance then of listening as well. So I think we talk about the importance of littering your house with books if you've got kids. The corollary is also littering it with all kinds of story and talk and dialogue and laughter and, you know, all of those memories, all of those things will lead to that sort of storytelling. So I think it's not something that's going to happen. You know, you're going to go home tonight and boom, your child's a family storyteller. It's a process. It's a lifelong way that you relate to each other as a family.
We really need to make room for quiet in our lives, mm-hmm. to make some space. I'll never forget one time my mother was telling me this story, and she said, you know, when your great-grandfather died, your great-grandmother stayed up all night in her rocking chair by the body in the kitchen, which is where they used to lay out the bodies on the tables, and relatives would be around, and my mother was there, and and this old woman got up out of her rocking chair and she went over to her husband and she felt his body from the top of his head to the bottom of his toes and then back up to his stomach. And she felt around there for a long time. And then she nodded her head and she went back to her rocking chair. And what that story was all about was my great-grandmother was a healer and she did all these herb cures and she was a midwife. And she just had to know what killed my great-grandfather. It was cancer, and she found it finally. And then she sat back down, and she was satisfied. And I think what my mother was telling me is that that this woman had a passion for knowledge, and that even in the face of death, of losing someone she'd been married to for almost 50 years, she had to find out. She had to know something. And, you know, a story like that, if she hadn't taken the time to tell me and I hadn't had the time to listen to her, there would have been a great hole in my life about the importance of a thirst for knowledge.
Mm-hmm. We have some people who are listening who would like to talk with us. Let's do that. The first caller is in Danville on our line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning. As I've been listening to the WLL over the years, when books are mentioned, I often jot down the titles on scraps of paper. And about 2 months ago, I gathered some of these and went down to the local library and had a list of them. And among them was Seven Brave Women. And so, that's in the children's section. And so I thought, really don't want that, but she brought it over anyway, so I took it home and read it and was so impressed with it that I took it down to the, before I returned it to the library, I took it to the school, the grade school at which I volunteer, and showed it to the librarian. And when I came back at noon from the classwork, I said, well, what'd you think of it? And he said, oh, I've already ordered it.
Well, you just made my day.
And so I certainly look forward to getting going north. And my question is, the children in the Danville school systems are on the Accelerated Reader Program. Is that also true in Champaign?
Yes, it is. Oh, well, some of the schools.
Oh, okay. Well, and are either of these books on that list?
I don't know.
I think mine is. Mine's a little bit older than Janice's.
Yeah, mine just came out, so
yeah,
I haven't
mine's
had
about
that
5 years old. I think most of my books are on it. Somebody very handily handed me a list of all the grade levels for my books on the Accelerated Reading Program.
Uh-huh.
But Janice's will be on there soon.
Well,
These are read-aloud books also, so most children won't be reading them for themselves.
That's true. What most of my time at the school is in listening to the children read their stories and ask them some pertinent questions about what they have just read so that when they take the quiz, they can usually get 100%, frankly.
Good for you. Yeah, it's wonderful.
And, of course, this school, I work almost exclusively with third-grade children, and this school only goes to fifth grade. And what do you know what Seven Brave Women is considered at what grade level?
Well, it's probably about third grade, but again, you can read it aloud to much younger children, and anywhere from a third grade on up could read it, and it's been used with fourth and fifth graders to stimulate their own, family folklore.
Absolutely, to encourage them to go to their own family, older members, and elicit stories, mm-hmm. because my mother died when I was a teenager, and I realized I did not know many of the stories that she would have had to tell about her growing up. And in later years, when my father remarried, I thought, well, it's a shame. I know much more about my stepmother's early childhood than I know about my own. But those are the things that we miss after we've failed to take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's sometimes a sad story that a lot of families tell. We spend so much time thinking about who we're going to leave the antique soup tureen or who's going to get the silverware, which ends up on eBay, and we don't realize that these stories are the most precious object, that, you know, the furniture, the clothing, the silver, those things can burn or be melted or be sold or be destroyed, but those stories are what's going to be timeless. So your point's well taken that they can be easily lost.
I did read a book years and years ago. Well, actually, I bought it for my stepmother because her sister had and her husband had homesteaded in Montana back in the late 1800s. And this was an unusual event in which a boy was only about 10 or 11 years old, and his father had been in the newspaper business in New York City but had bought this small town paper in Montana. And this young boy actually interviewed himself, Calamity Jane, and many of the old time, and he told these stories in a book, and I don't remember the name of the book, but it sure impressed me.
Huh.
You know, what 10-year-old boy
is
going to do that? Well, I've taken up much of your time, but I certainly appreciate
the
stories that you have told.
Very good. Well, thanks. We are into about our last 15 minutes on the program. Let me again introduce our guests. And we had someone who said, would you please mention the titles and authors of the book again and that we've been talking about? And I will do that. Our guests this morning, Janice Harrington and Betsy Hearn. Janice Harrington is the Children's Services Coordinator at the Champaign Public Library. And her book is titled Going North, which is about her experiences growing up in the South and then coming north with her family in the 1960s. She'll be doing a book signing, so if you'd like to meet her, say hi, get a copy of the book, what have you. She'll be doing a book signing at Pages for All Ages Bookstore on Sunday, November 14th, starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And as I said back at the beginning of the program, anytime you want to stop by the Champaign Public Library, say hi, of course you could do that as well. Betsy Hearn is professor of library science in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at University of Illinois. Her book, among her books, is Seven Brave Women. The Going North is brand new. Seven Brave Women has been out for a while, but certainly you should be able to find it. If you went over to, say, Pages for All Ages, I'm sure you could also find a copy of Seven Brave Women. And both of them are very interested in children's literature and have been following that for a long time. And Betsy has written books about that. She's interested in fairy tales. She has a book that is kind of intended to recommend titles to teachers, but also to parents if they're interested in finding books for children, has, I guess, in the past, not so much anymore, but you were involved with this, the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, which is also based here at the U of I, and that's a publication that's primarily for teachers and librarians, but it could be consulted by anybody who is interested in what's new in the world of children's books, because there are always reviews of new titles and so forth, things like that. And it's online, by the way, if you want to check it out that way.
Speaking of online, Betsy and I did a workshop on called The Family Mirror for librarians and teachers. Mm-hmm. And the book list where we recommend books that are useful for if you're working with kids and looking for how to research family stories. If you go to www.champagne.org, there, that list is there, under Family Mirror.
Okay. Let's talk with some other people here. Let's go to Champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have had the pleasure of seeing Going North. It's a wonderful book, and I'll be looking for Betsy's book as well. Since Halloween is coming up, I began to think about a custom which is still observed in some parts of rural Mexico that I think is kind of wonderful. On the Day of the Dead, which, of course, is our Halloween, the family takes a picnic of the favorite foods of the great-grandmothers and great-grandmothers and grandfathers and so on who have passed away to the cemetery. And they also take a bottle of wine, if they can afford it, champagne, and they sit around the grave. Usually it's a family plot, or maybe if they're wealthy enough, a family mausoleum. And the family tells stories about the people who have passed away, so that the children are hearing those family tales. Mm-hmm. The children tend to look forward to it because it's something that happens every year, almost like Christmas or like our manner of celebration of Halloween. But it is a way of repeating and fastening into the children's memories those family stories that otherwise, as Janice said a few minutes ago, can get lost while we worry about the soup tureens and such. So maybe that's a custom that we should start for our Halloween, to go and visit the folks who have passed away and take a picnic of their favorite foods and something to toast them with, and then tell stories about them.
That's a great idea. And in my husband's family, on the anniversary of the death of his mother, for example, they always light a candle in memory. And you know, you could accompany that with a story about that person, too.
Right.
Maybe another way. So maybe start your own family traditions. I mean, but I like that idea of going to the graveyard and doing that.
And don't forget Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a time when everybody's getting together around the table and a little too full to do this, that, or the other. You know, I know there's a football game, but on the other hand, time is precious and the stories are passing away. Yeah. So take a little bit of time after dinner and tell some of those, tell that story about that time Uncle Ben tried to jump out of the loft and broke his leg, whatever happened in your family. Just take, even if it's one or two stories, take the 5 or 10 minutes it takes to do that, and then do it again in the next holiday, in the next holiday.
Great idea.
Dig out the family.
Thanks so much. Wonderful program.
Well, thank you. Let's talk again with another caller, and this person is in Urbana, line two. Hello.
You just gave me some ideas for a calendar that I do every year now for our family. I've become the family genealogist, and genealogy programs, I have Family Tree Maker, and it will create a calendar of birthdays if you tell it what people in your database that you've created you want to include. And I always include the direct ancestors and the living close relatives. Mm-hmm. And it fills in how old they will be on the date for that year that you're making the calendar for. So I've got somebody who's going to be 365 years old on a particular date. And every year for the artwork, I tell something that I've learned about some interesting person. And so I've got a photo, I include that. But I could do it for, closer people and tell the kind of stories that you're talking about. So you've given me whole slews of ideas for future years.
You might be interested. There's this magazine, I think it's called Legacy, but don't quote me. You may have to call me at the library and I'll give you the right title. But I think it's Legacy. And all it is, it shows you how to take your family stories or memorabilia or history and how you can make it into different art objects or something, which is sort of a tangent to what you're talking about, but something you can do.
Well, you know, there's another thing is that we can use this electronic medium to our own ends. A lot of people are starting to put up family story websites. And that way, people who are scattered, family members who are scattered all over the countryside, can tune in and tell a story. I know in storytelling, I've had a number of students who have created websites for their parents, you know, 30th anniversary or whatever. Everybody across the country sends in a story, and they can, you know, put in pictures. The electronic revolution, while it sometimes crowds our time and space, can also be used for family stories.
There's also in the genealogy help area, there's a an author, Emily Croom, C-R-O-O-M, and she's got a couple of things for beginning genealogists, one of which is the Unpuzzling Your Past workbook. It's got forms for people trying to do their research, but it also has sets of questions to ask people in the family, and she's got them grouped by era. So, for instance, there's one for the Depression to the 1930s with some questions that you can fill out the form with the person, but they might also provoke other memories and stories once you get somebody going. And there's another book that I've found that if somebody wanted to go farther back, it's Discovering Your Female Ancestors. It's by Sharon Carmack, C-A-R-M-A-C-K, and it's Special Strategies for Uncovering Hard-to-Find Information About your Female Lines, and doing research on what life would have been like for your particular women ancestors if you can't find details. And we've got a great resource here in Champaign-Urbana in the Urbana Free Library Archives. They have computer access to census images, databases, and all kinds of things, and great staff to help you figure out where to go looking for answers to questions. And I'm amazed that with some of the skills that I've learned in doing this, some of the things I've been able to find, not always online, but for instance, my mother had said that my grandfather, her father, had been sent off from home at the age of 15 to work in a bicycle factory. He'd been sent from rural New York down to Connecticut. And so I thought, well, I wonder if I can find proof of this. And I found the address of a library in the area where she thought he was, and I said, would you look in your city directories and see if you can find this name in the city directories? And they looked for me, and they did, and they sent the it back, so now I know where he worked, and I'd have backup. And so there's part of a beginning of a story to tell my grandkids. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the details before, and I suppose I wouldn't have had to have the details. But sometimes asking around and asking librarians for how would I find some more information about this story, so I can flesh it out. You may find that there's resources out there for you. So thanks.
All right, thanks.
You know, don't forget the sort of common questions that get people rolling too. Like, what was the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to you?
Yeah, and also not just stories, but there's a lot of little family ephemera that we probably don't pay attention to. The sayings, you know, my mother was always fond of telling me. I don't know why, but a hard head makes a soft behind, or a bragging dog carries a dirty tail. Or my grandmother would say, when children are at home, they're on your mind, but when they're away from home, they're on your heart. And those things, too, are things to hold on to and that teach us about one another.
What does that mean, a hard head makes a soft behind?
She tended to say it when I had really messed up in a major way.
It meant she was going to paddle you.
when you're being really stubborn,
yeah.
If you're being stubborn about something, you'll sort of pay for it in the end.
Yeah.
Okay. We're coming down here to the point we have a couple of minutes left, and I don't know if there are some final sort of thoughts that you'd like to leave people before we go.
Well, one thing is that we need to treasure our elderly in ways that we often don't. And what they have to give us is stories, and we need to take the time to to listen to them, because often we don't realize how important those stories are until they die, and then it's too late. So, of course, the elderly, but also, you know, our middle-aged and our children, all those stories are precious, so we need to listen and we need to tell.
I guess I would say that stories are sacred ground, and I would caution everybody that they're also dangerous. We tell each other stories in our families, and sometimes when there's not communication, there's stories. You know, there's that person who becomes the family black sheep, and the story lives. That they be careful what we're saying, because those stories take on a life of their own. So I don't want to sort of turn people loose and think that, you know, all is necessarily going to be happiness and light. Be respectful.
Story is power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to thank you both very much for coming by and giving some of your time.
Thank you.
We certainly appreciate it.
It was fun. Yeah.
And the books, again, that we've talked about, Betsy's book is titled Seven Brave Women, and that is published by Green Willow as the publisher. And then Janice's book.
And my mother wants everybody in the state of the United States to buy a copy.
Well, that should guarantee some pretty impressive sales. The title of her book, and it's just out, is titled Going North, and the publisher is what?
Farrar Straus Giroux.
Yeah. FSG, it says there on the spine.
Right.
And it has just recently come out, and both of the books, I'm sure, would be available at a bookstore near you, and if you would be interested in getting a signed copy of Going North by Janice Harrington and just meeting her, I want to mention one more time that she will be doing this book signing at Pages for All Ages Bookstore on Sunday, November 14th. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so you should stop by. And just maybe sometime you might want to go over there and see what they have in their children's book section.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have a really nice collection of children's books over there.
They do.
Or you could stop by the library. What
Either
a novel
place.
Concept.
Either place.
The
Either
library.
Place. I like
you
libraries.
Go there.
I like bookstores.
They have
it's
books.
It's all good.
You can have as many as you want as long as you bring them back. And certainly, if you're looking for recommendations, this is something, you know, from time to time on the program, we talk about books for grown-ups and also for children. And I always like to suggest to people that if you're looking for help, you're trying to find titles to get your kids or grandkids or whoever, the children in your life, jazzed about reading, go and ask the librarians.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for. You won't be bothering them.
Absolutely.
They like it.
Come by.
They like
it. That's what we're for.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Janice Harrington, she's Children's Services Coordinator at the Champaign Public Library. And Betsy Hearn is professor in the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at University of Illinois. Support for the broadcast today comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, 6th and University in Champaign, for over 14 years, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of name brand foods from around the world. Your suggestions and requests are always welcome. World Harvest encourages you to join them in supporting public radio. The broadcast also made possible by grant from Birkenstock Concepts by Heel to Toe in downtown Urbana. For over 25 years, offering all sizes and widths of Birkenstocks, from clogs and sandals to work, dress, and sport shoes, Birkenstock Concepts offers repair and modification services and a certified podorthist and orthotist on the staff. And that's it for us. You want you to stay tuned, though. Coming up next, the Afternoon Magazine. The host is Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll hear about the Disease Detection Corps of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the Epidemic Intelligence Service. Our guest will be journalist Marin McKenna. She joins us following the 1 o'clock news. She's a science and medical writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and the author of Beating Back the Devil. Let's take a look now at what's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. December wheat, 314 down 2. March, 325 and a quarter down 1.5. December corn, 204 and a half down 3 quarters. March, 215 down 1 half. May, 223.